I've been listening to a lot of podcasts lately.
Yeah.
And we talked about this pre-recording.
Yeah, before the cameras turned on.
That absolutely, they say that a lot in these podcasts.
Oh, yeah?
They reference what they said pre-recording. It makes you kind of feel like, oh, we're seeing behind the scenes, so that's why I said it.
Luke, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, thank you.
How have you been doing?
I'm doing well, you know. Summer's cracking away. I guess if this is released later, fall's doing great, you know. Time is going well. Just a peaceful period of my life right now.
That's good. That's good. Able to relax a little bit.
Yeah, I would say. I would say, you know, it's interesting. I feel like I'm relaxing. Maybe I'm not seeing friends as much as I would expect it from a more laid-back summer. But I'm also seeing them, so it's...
Oh, okay, that's good. So, that's really good, yeah.
I'm not alone in my home all day, every day.
Right, right.
But, you know, I think as I'm getting older, you know, friends are doing more stuff. Like, they might leave town for a while versus, like, when you're a kid, everyone's kind of around.
Right,
or
right.
Crew.
They have to be. Right, yeah. They're stuck at home with their parents, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But what about yourself?
I'm good. I just finished shooting this film this summer.
Wow,
so it's been really cool. Yeah, we just got the last shots. You know, it's simple. You know, of course, the final shot is the most boring of all of it.
It has to be.
It has to be.
It has to be that scene where the character is just in the car, and it's like a 30-second shot, and you're... They're contemplating life.
Yeah. Yeah, but I stitched it together this morning. I kind of have a rough edit now. The biggest thing that I'm trying to do with this project is just keep it tight.
Mm.
So I did a film last spring, and it was about 9 minutes long, which was great. But it felt a little bit... There was a little too much breathing room in there. And part of that was by design, like the way that I was making the film. So this one, I'm just trying to bring it all a lot tighter.
Gotcha.
Yeah, yeah.
How long? What's the running time?
It's like 7 minutes right now.
Okay.
Yeah, which is kind of perfect. I think I just put the credits at like another 15 seconds, so I'm going to try to bring it all so that like the totality of it is 7 minutes.
Nice.
But it's nice. I mean, it's cool to work on this sort of thing where like the scenes are literally like 15 seconds, and you can like dial in like a 15 second scene. You can like get it like to the frame where you want it to be.
Would you say this is your best work so far?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. I was working on the film, and I was showing a cut of it to a friend of mine, and it was astonishing to see his reaction to it, where he hadn't seen my work since, like, the Red Crystal days, and maybe even a little bit after that when we did, like, that Doctor Who show and the Band for Hire show and that sort of thing. He hadn't seen it in years, and his reaction was so... He was just very much, like, enthralled by it in a way that I was like, whoa. Like, that was really, like, and he was just praising. I was like, wow. So I have learned something, maybe, in the past couple of years. Yeah. And I think this one that I did this summer, or this past spring, which I would have said was probably my best work up to this point, this one is certainly better than that one. So, by definition, I think I'm improving a little bit.
You feel... Your senior year's coming up. Spring semester, senior year. You're no longer a student.
Yeah.
You'll feel... Do you think you'll be like, I'm ready to make films?
I think
so. Qualifications.
I feel like I'm out of the qualifications. I don't know if I'll have the money.
Okay.
But...
Okay.
That's the idea. I mean, yeah. I think I'm ready. I definitely feel really, really fortunate that I've had the opportunities that I've had to work with the professors I have, to make the films that I have up to this point. And really, you know, learn as much as I possibly can. But I guess it'll really be a test of, you know, sitting down and trying to make something without the academic support to see where I really stand.
Without that.
Yeah.
Built-in critique.
Exactly.
Evaluation.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, is that, like, you get to have someone who's watching everything you're doing, who really knows what's good, and knows you're not there yet. And that's been the greatest thing, is the first time I had a class where the professor honestly and truly, like, told me that he knew that I could do better. Like, that's when I fell in love with the, like, education side of things, where because up to that point, all my professors have been like, wow, you're doing really great stuff. This is really cool.
Yeah.
And maybe, like, maybe you should tweak this. Maybe you should do that. But it's really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
And then this professor just cut all the bullshit.
Mm.
And it was just like, hey, that scene sucks. Reshoot that scene.
Yeah.
And I feel like I needed that push. And once I got that push, I could feel my work getting better.
Mm. Yeah. I imagine you're one of the probably few film students coming in with so much time behind a lens. So for a while, the teachers probably were like, oh, Meshach's fine.
Right. And I was a little bit arrogant about the amount of time I'd had behind that lens, right? Where like and somewhat rightfully so. I was watching a cut of The Red Crystal last night.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. Have you seen it since it came out?
I think a couple years ago, maybe not that long, maybe like, I think probably COVID happened. And I'm like, you know, let me check this out again. And I don't know if I watched it full, but I think like I watched like 10 minutes and jumped a little bit. But yeah, I was like, man, this holds up.
There are some wild scenes in that film. And watching that, one, the dialogue is just the worst thing I could have possibly written at the time. And so much of it just doesn't make any sense. But watching that and compared to this, I was like, oh, okay. Like, I did have a lot of time behind the lens, but I also was really figuring it out myself.
Yeah.
There was no instruction. No one was telling me put the camera here, or this should be a little wider, or you should shoot tighter.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really know how cameras worked. That was an interesting thing. Like, I didn't really know how a lens worked and like what the f-stop was actually controlling. I just knew like that image looks better than that image.
Yeah.
That's
interesting, you know. I guess the feedback was probably the most helpful thing. When you're in a vacuum, you might be in there for like, you could spend all the time doing something, but if you're not doing it right and no one tells you it's wrong,
right,
it's hard to get clarification or to grasp.
Did I tell you about my idea for designing this like really inexpensive like pseudo college?
Mm-mm.
So I had this thought last semester where we were like mid-COVID. And so much of the stuff I was doing was reading on my own. Like, there were some lectures, but the lectures really weren't the substance of the class.
Yeah.
It was reading on my own and writing papers and then getting feedback on the papers.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this thought where I was like, what if I designed a program where there was, like, a specific reading list that you did, and then you could write papers based on those readings that you did, and then it was, like, grad students could get paid a little bit of money to then like grade those papers and give you feedback on your work.
Mm-hmm.
And so it could be for people that either didn't want to go the traditional college route, people that had gone the traditional college route and just wanted to like learn something new. Like, I would love to take an anthropology class. I probably won't take an anthropology class before I graduate.
Yeah.
But what if I like, you know, could essentially do that,
mm-hmm.
get the benefits of the college without the accreditation? Like, that's just not going to happen. But if I could actually just like create sort of this experience for people.
I think it'd be interesting. I mean, that's be like these workshops, either like to brush up as a writer, like, oh, read intensely, write intensely, get feedback, and go again. Or like in anthropology. I think it'd be interesting, you know? It's like, I feel like, you know, like there's things out there like Coursera and stuff, which, I mean, the last time I did one, it's just lectures.
Right.
So it's more passive. So I think this might be a winner that you just thought of.
Right, it's sort of the opposite side of that, where instead of the lecture side of things, it's just the, like, active.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what your experience has been in college. There's some professors that the lectures really, truly are the meat of the class, and there's other ones where it's, like, the other material that I'm doing is what I'm learning, and the lectures are sort of there to just help guide me along.
Yes, I would agree. Like, last semester, I took a class and it was so much more about the reading, the writing on the reading, and the lectures like were required, so I went, but really it was just kind of like asking people questions about it. And I would agree. And you know, I read this book last summer. I was doing a lot of reading. And I had these big plans to become excellent or whatever.
Okay.
But it was a book called Peak, and it's a science of expertise. So basically, it's this researcher, I forget his name, but he's been cited a lot. But he researches like what makes people experts at their field. And so some of his research kind of generated Malcolm Gladwell's Outliers of 10,000 Hours rule. But his big thing was like, in order to actually improve, there are like multiple dimensions. Like, it's not just practice. It's not just time. It's, he says, purposeful practice. So in that practice, you're doing the right type of practice, like the one that's gonna have the most impact. So like the right exercises, like you're a basketball player or whatnot. And you're fully engaged, it's never passive, it's always active. So you're pushing yourself at the edge. You're getting immediate feedback, or as immediate as you can. And then you're constantly at the edge of, you're always uncomfortable.
Mm.
So like the moment like you're doing exercise or like doing something and you're comfortable, you stop. That's when you plateau. So you have to find new ways. And he said that's what experts are able to do, either with a coach or by themselves. They're able to find new ways to be uncomfortable. So like his big premise was basically like, people are born with talent, but the level of talent that someone has, one, might not be talent, but rather they practice in a way that we just didn't account for. And then that talent really is negligible compared to the hours of practice that goes in. So it was a very inspiring read, and I was like, I'm gonna become great at whatever. But you know, it's one thing to know, it's another thing to do the hard work. And so I was convinced for a little bit, for like 3 days, that I was gonna become a professional basketball player. And listeners, what you don't know about me is I'm a generous 5'9". I would say on a good day. And I looked it up. I'm like, okay, there's some 5'8 players, like one or two. I could totally become, you know, if I get great at shooting, great at dribbling, I could do this. But, you know, a lot of things stood in my way. Namely, I mean, I did have a basketball, but it was kind of hot out that summer. So I was like, I don't know if I want to go outside. And then the gyms were closed at campus. So I was like, oh well.
No, just didn't happen, yeah.
But I think reading that book and several other books kind of has changed my viewpoint on learning a little bit more. And so when I go into, like, this past semester, like, I was like, okay, let me push my, like, you know, I feel like with my writing in the past, like, I write good enough to get a good grade. And I was like, let me try to go beyond, and maybe I don't get feedback that I wanted or whatever. But, you know, now I'm thinking about things. I'm like, okay, if I wanted to do this, one, it's liberating. Like, now I'm like, I could learn all these different things.
Right.
I have a goal of learning to surf this summer. It's going to happen. Although I did have a dream last night that my hand got bitten off by a shark.
Ooh, that's not a good sign.
It's not, but it healed very quickly.
Did the hand grow back in the
dream? It did not grow back, but it was more like I just all of a sudden had a stump. And it was right at the wrist. And then I had to go to dance, and I was dancing, and I had to partner people. Unfortunately, it was my right hand, so there was a point in my dream where I was like, I need to learn how to write again, because I'm right-handed, and I've lost my right hand. So there's that. But I am convinced I'm going to go to California, visit a friend, try to surf. I've just felt, this may be wrong, but I just feel, I'm convinced that I am innately talented at surfing.
Okay. And have you ever surfed before?
I have not.
Okay.
I have a limited time in the ocean. Growing up in Ohio, which is a landlocked state, in Columbus, which is not by a Great Lake or anything like that, I have limited time. However, there's a thing that is pretty, I think, a time capsule of our childhood. It's called a ripstick.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you're familiar with this.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't think the younger generation quite knows. I think they still do it. But I think when we were growing up, you could say ripstick and kind of assume everyone knew what
it was. Right, right.
Well, I ripped the ripstick. I ripped it. And I trained long and hard on that one. I first got it in the middle of winter. And, of course, it was an icy winter that we no longer have. And so I trained in my basement, which was just a cement floor. So it was a real, like, it should have been a montage where, you know, you see the main character training in suboptimal conditions. Like, he's making his own weights and stuff like that, but he's doing great. So I did rip. I ripped a lot. I played ripstick basketball.
How does that work?
It's just a one-on-one, and you have a basketball, and you have a ripstick, and you're on the ripstick the whole time. If you fall off the ripstick, you change position. You can't knock people off the ripstick. That's a rule.
That makes sense, yeah.
It's very similar to basketball in the sense that there's a lot of fouling. And then you just shoot, and you have to circle around. It's kind of like how if you play pickup in, like, it's a half court.
Okay.
I did get a concussion from that. I literally just fell backwards. And listeners, a ripstick is like an inch off the ground. So it's just like if you had fallen backwards while wearing slightly higher shoes.
Right.
But so anyway, so I'm convinced now that I can surf.
Right.
And this book that I read, Peak, has convinced me that I can learn a lot of things. You know, it does take a long time. But I feel like, for instance, I read this book, and I do ballet. I do it okay. I wouldn't say I'm very good at it. But I read it, and I thought, my whole ballet training has been suboptimal.
Mm.
And I would say most people who take ballet, their training isn't really what would be recommended by this author. Because usually you're in a class, and a class is typically, like when you're growing up, the class is like 2 hours long. Half of it's on bar, so you're just working on like footwork and stuff like that, and the other half is in center and like jumps and whatnot. But for the most part, you do a combination. The instructor shows you a combination, you do it, and then you do another combination. They might come up to you and be like, oh, you're pointing your foot more, or like you're turning in, or your foot's sickled or whatnot. So they might give you a correction, individual correction, but more often than not, you're either giving it to someone else because you're in class like 20 or 30 people, or just to an entire class. So it's not really tailored towards you, which is one of the five additionals of becoming an expert is immediate feedback.
Okay, sure.
And it's not very repetitive compared to other sports. So like if you're in a sport, you do a lot of drills rather than just play the game.
Right.
I do not play a lot of sports, so this is where the analogy ends. But, so like, we just do a combination, you might repeat it once or twice, but you don't do that for every combination, and you keep on going, and then the moves you're doing in the combination, it's not like you're doing a ton of repetitive actions, you're dancing.
Okay, so you're going through, like, the whole thing.
Yeah, you're going through the whole thing, and so it's not very repetitive, and although you're working out, you're working hard, so you feel like you're pushing yourself to the edge, each individual element I wouldn't say it's being pushed to the edge, at least for me. Now, there's people probably out there. I know we have a big audience. And a large portion, I know we did the analytics of this, are dancers. And some of them, who are probably pretty good, will say, Luke, you're just dead wrong. And I'll say, well, that's why you're good, because you had a different experience than me. And I think, so I was like, Luke, so this when I read this, I was like, I'm going to become a baller, basketball, and I'm going to become professional just for a couple of years and then switch out. I was like, Luke, this is the time to drastically improve in dance. I mean, you're going to start recording yourself. You're going to start drilling. And similarly, I was like, I do not have a studio space. And I could have asked, like, hey, can I get a key to the studio space? Because it's not really used during the summer. But it was kind of hot, once again.
The heat really seems to be a big factor in all of this.
It
yeah.
is. Today, for instance, I biked to dance, and I took class for the first time in the summer, and I biked home, and I was like, that was a hot one. I had to sit for a couple minutes before I could even shower, because I was like, that was warm. And then, luckily, I was able to drive to our studio space here that we'll record at. And I'm driving my sister's car right now because mine is in the shop and hers has AC. So
ooh.
I cranked it and I was living a life of luxury.
That is a life of luxury, yeah. Yeah, car with AC, that's the way to go.
It is nice. Last summer, the car I was using did not have AC.
No.
And I would work at Kroger, which was a great job. And then I worked in the produce department. And so then before I left, I would stay in like the cooler, which is where we kept the produce before we took it out. It's not the freezer, so it's like it's like 36 degrees.
Right.
It's not freezing.
It's like a fridge.
It's like
yeah.
a fridge. It's like, I was standing there for like 5 minutes, get very cold.
Okay.
Uncomfortably cold. Walk out to my car, which was baking in the parking lot. Get in, and like the first 3 minutes of my drive home, I'm like, this is amazing.
Right.
It's like when you get into a hot tub right away.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this is great. And then I would hope that with the windows down, by the time I no longer liked the heat. It had to cool off.
That's a brilliant strategy right there. Yeah, that's really good.
It worked semi well. So it wasn't too bad once I figured it out. The worst was like if it was hot and I wasn't able to get that cooler time. You know, if they're like, Luke, why are you still here? I'm like, I'm just sitting in the corner. Like, well, I have to move out the strawberries. And I'm like, I'm no longer working clocked out.
So what did you find with this, the peak book? Did it correspond, or what were some things that maybe did correspond or didn't correspond specifically with the dance then?
I would say, well, it's interesting because I was thinking like, that some things that I think does really well with dance training is picking up choreography. Because you're constantly pushed. Because like in class alone, like they what how dance is trained, like you do a combination, and so it's usually like a minute or 2 minutes of tendus. Like you start out pliés, which is just like you're bending your knees, tendus, which is like you're pointing your feet, tag, and you move on. So you're constantly getting new choreography. You have to learn it quickly, and then you perform it, and you know right away if you did right or not.
Yeah.
So you have that feedback.
So that was one of the tenets, was just instant feedback.
Yeah, instant feedback. Right. So you're being pushed, you know, it's not like you keep on repeating the same combination.
Sure.
So it's not like you're learning it, and once you learn it, you keep on doing it. You get a new combination. You get instant feedback. And I would say it's an effective form of practice. So I think dancers are pretty good. Now, this varies between dancers. I wouldn't say I'm the best at picking up things. Just, it's more out of lack of interest. But, so I would say that, I think we train effectively in regards to picking up choreography. And so then when it comes time to actually, like when you're putting together a piece, I think dancers do pretty well, good job at, the choreographer will come, do it, the dancer does it. And when you're working on a piece, it's a lot less, it always depends on the choreographer, but typically it's a lot less structured. So like, you know, the choreographer comes in with maybe a semi-vision, but they're choreographing it while they're choreographing it on you. So,
oh wow.
So you have to be able, so like, they'll do like maybe 8 counts, you do it, and you're like, do this instead. And so
it's a little bit fluid in terms of figuring out what it's going
to
be.
And so I think in order for that to happen, you have to have pretty skilled at picking things up pretty quickly. Sure. Otherwise, it would take too much time to get those 8 counts on you, and they want to be able to tweak it in a real time, basically. So I would say that's good. And then I would say, I think one way that it could be improved, for instance, is partnering. Now, partnering is typically guy and girl, especially in ballet. And it's one of the hardest things for partnering instruction is typically when you grow up, you're in a dance studio. Typically, if you're a guy, you're probably the only guy. I mean, there might be two or three. Chances are maybe there's two or three your age, maybe, but it's usually like kind of scattered. So, and there's a ton of girls. So it's kind of hard to have a partner in class, just logistically.
Right.
Because there's too many girls for one guy. So like if I did have partner class, there might be a lot of people. Typically you might have like 4 girls to 1 guy.
Mm.
Which kind of works out in this sense for guys, because you repeat, you have new partners, so you're kind of, you're like, well, she's struggling with this differently, so you're more attuned. So, but for partner in class, a lot of times it's not very drill based. Like it's just kind of like you start out and then maybe you do this or that. And so you don't get a lot of practice with partnering. And then when you do it, most of your practice comes in from choreography when you're actually putting on a piece. And that's a lot less structured partnering. That's kind of, depending on whatever you're doing, you know, it's not like you're practicing one move over again. You're like, we're going to do this, and then you're going over this floor, you know, going up, you're moving and stuff. It's dynamic. So that's where you get your practice in. So you're not really like, why are my partner pirouettes not working? Let me do 10 of them in a row to get it right. You're never doing that. So I would say that is one of the things that struggles. I would say jumps, you do a little better with that because it's specific. You know, you're like, okay, we're doing jumps now. And especially for male dancers, there's certain jumps that we do that girls don't do. We do tours, which is like jump in the air and you spin. Usually you do a double and you land.
Oh, wow.
And so that just requires a lot of practice.
Sure,
so,
just like repeating the same action again.
So that one, I would say in dance, we repeat it quite a bit, and you get feedback on that one. but maybe on soda boxes or just like where you kind of leap and your legs are in there. That one, people are like, oh, you can kind of just see and you do.
Right.
And it's less like, oh, do it again, do it again, do it again. So I would say that. But it's interesting because I read this book and I reevaluated because I had been dancing for 10 years and I was like...
When did you start?
I was 9.
Wow.
Which is, I would say, is a pretty common age for a lot of people. Some people start younger. I would say if you're a parent out there and you're like, I want my child to be the next Baryshnikov or Misty Copeland, for those who know those references, you don't have to start them too early. You know,
right.
8 or 9. Because if you're younger, you're really not doing anything.
Sure.
Like, you're in class, but you're not.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Attention. And so, like, I've seen people who start at, like, 12 or 13, which someone might be like, that's kind of old, but they do all right. Because
yeah.
they catch up a lot quicker because their mind's more developed.
Right, you're older, you can, like, handle it a little bit better.
Yeah, so it's been interesting, and I told myself, Luke, this is going to be a summer of transformation for you in terms of ballet. You're
going to
stretch every day.
How's that going?
It has been not a summer of transformation for me. It has been a slow evolution, and evolution takes billions of years.
This is true.
I have stretched, I would say, 40%, maybe less, of the days of the summer so far. However, I will say this. I went to class today. It was my first class in a while. And I did bar, so I was warmed up. And in between bar and center, I stretched a little bit. And I was like, man, I'm a lot more flexible than I have felt like at home.
Just interesting.
Because, like, when I'm stretching at home, I'm not sweating. You know, I'm not warmed up in the way.
Right.
So, like, I was like, the last time I took a class, I was not this far on my splits. So that was good.
That's nice.
I think it's going to hopefully inspire me to stretch more.
Yeah.
I think I've reevaluated my summer of rebirth and whatnot for dance. No longer is the goal to become a great dancer by the summer. Rather, get my splits, be flexible, so in the fall, I have the facility to start working on these things.
Yeah. Do you find, as we get older, that time just seems to go faster? Like, I used to think I could spend a summer and, yeah, like, become great at something.
Mm-hmm.
I could write, you know, a
mm-hmm.
novel. And now it's like, let me try and read 2 books this summer.
Yeah.
Let me try and, like, the amount of things that I'm really trying to get done are just substantially smaller than I feel like they used to be. I don't know if I was just unreasonable when I was younger or if I, like, legitimately, it's just taking me more time to do
things. I agree. I've noticed that a lot. First of all, I'm like, man, it's already near the end of July.
Right, right.
And summer is almost over. So I think summer feels like it's just going faster. Time's going faster, I feel like. But I think part of the reason is, like, now, like, when we're 8 or 9 and we're doing something, you know, whatever we're doing takes, like, an hour a day. Like, if you're on a summer swim team.
Right.
And you're like, wow, I did so much stuff today. I swam, I saw my friend, I did this and that. I read my book, but books are, like, so small. Now, I think as we get older, the stuff we're doing is more time intensive. So, like,
that's a good point.
It takes more time to do less stuff.
Yeah, it does. It's almost like levels in a video game, right? Where the first ones, it's like, and then you get higher, and it's like, wow, I spent a week on level 42.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, that's what it feels like a little bit, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, well, kind of going off these books I read last time, I did do a lot of reading, because here's why, because I worked at 7 a.m. at Kroger, so.
Okay.
I had to get up at, like, 5:45 to get there. And so I had to fall asleep pretty early. And I wasn't seeing a lot of my friends because it was COVID. And so I was reading a lot at night because I was like, man, I have to fall asleep by, like, 9 o'clock.
Right.
And my body didn't want to do that.
Sure.
So I was reading a lot. So I read this other book by this author. His name's Cal Newport. Check him out. He writes a lot of books. It's a lot about kind of habits and stuff like that.
Right.
So, but being deliberate, and so he's like, you know, there's so much more time in the day than we think, because so much of our time just kind of goes off to this or that and isn't deliberate. So that also inspired me. So I was like, Luke, start at the beginning of the day, 15-minute increments, figure out what you're going to do with your day. That's a lot of work.
That is a lot of work.
I did it over the semester a couple times, whenever crunch time would happen.
Right.
I'd be like, man, I have a lot of work because I procrastinated to do. So I would do that. It was very effective. But summer comes around, you're like, don't want to work this much.
Right.
So, I don't know. I feel like reading those books and doing it over the year when, like, finals come or, like, midterms come or, like, projects are due and seeing it works pretty well, I'm like, I'm going to become a god. I'm going to do... I'm going to be just... Like, there's... It's clear that I'm just going to be the greatest at whatever I'm doing.
Right, right.
But it hasn't happened yet. And
darn.
Well, I'll tell you how I spend my days.
Okay, please do.
I will
please
tell you just how my Sundays have been going. For instance, today, which has actually, I've done quite a bit. Today is an outlier. It's a typical day. I wake up, maybe it's 10 o'clock, maybe it's 9 o'clock, depending how much I can drag myself out of bed. And typically, I'm a morning person.
Yeah.
I don't have to stay in bed long. Like, once I wake up, I walk out of bed, I'm up. Like, I'm not groggy at all. But anyway, wake up 9:10, putz around a little bit, eat some food. That takes me a while just to make food.
It does take a while. It takes a long time.
Like, I'm not rushing. So, even if it's cereal, even if it's cereal.
How long does it take you to make a bowl of cereal, Luke?
I would say, I had to pick out the bowl, and I set it there. Am I getting trapped in conversation with someone? I come back. And I poured the cereal, and I would say, getting a bowl and pouring the cereal, you know, I'm not crunched on time, so I'm like, oh, this or that. Once I put the milk in, it's go time, because I'm like, I cannot let this get too soggy, so I'm going hard, because I like a little crunch in my cereal.
Sure.
Depending on
the
cereal.
That's the right way to eat cereal, a little crunch, yeah.
So that takes a while. So I would say I usually finish breakfast around 11 o'clock.
Okay.
And during the school year, I finish breakfast before 8.
Well, there you go.
And then eat lunch at 11. So it's a very different look. And then, if it's a day off for me, 11 to 12, I'm just walking around the house. 12 to 1, maybe I've sat on the couch. 1 to 2, you know, it's been a very laid back summer.
No, I love it. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, thank you. It's all by design.
Clearly, you thought about this ahead of time. You planned this thing out so that it would really map out to the schedule. Yeah,
I did.
Yeah, I can tell.
Let's see, what else? And, yeah, I would say that. I've been eating breakfast for dinner a lot recently.
Oh, yeah?
I just fry up an egg or two.
Breakfast is the easiest food to make.
It is.
You know, it's like... Eggs are so healthy for you.
Mm-hmm.
You can have a little milk. Milk is good for you.
Mm-hmm.
Get you some protein.
Mm-hmm.
A little sausage.
Mm-hmm.
More protein.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's dinner time, and I'm like, do I really want to like make rice? Do I really want to make chicken? I could just fry some potatoes and eggs.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Yes. I think I perfected my fried egg technique.
What is your fried egg technique?
Thank you. Thank you for asking. I wanted you to. That's why I said I think I perfected it. Well, I just got some recent feedback from my Nana. I always feel a little weird saying my Nana to other people because I call my grandma Nana.
Yeah.
My whole family does.
I do as well.
Thank you. Yeah. And I feel like everyone says grandma. Everyone knows what grandma is.
Yeah.
You know? And I think everyone knows what Nana is, but you don't hear people say, my Nana.
Right, right. They'll say their grandma to other people.
Yeah.
Right.
And so I thought about this on the way here. I was like, if I bring up Nana, to me, Shaq. Do I say grandma or do I say Nana? Well, if my family listens to this, they'll be like, who is grandma, Luke? Who is this strange woman you're living with? It's Nana. So my grandma is in town for this week because my mom and my sister have gone away and I need a babysitter since I'm only 20.
Right.
So she's here, and I made some eggs for myself last night, and she's like, well, Luke, do you want to crack me up an egg? I said, sure, Nana. And so I made it. She thought it was marvelous.
Now, oh, really?
This is also your Nana, you know?
Right.
I could do pretty much anything. She's like, Luke, you're just great at it. And I'm like, thank you, Nana, I am. And so she thought it was great. So it kind of made me feel a little more confident with my eggs. What I've been doing recently is I'm a big egg fry guy, and I like it, runny.
Okay.
And I would say I'd rather undercook my eggs than overcook.
Oh, really? Okay, wow.
I know this is most people don't like that.
I don't like the runny white part, yeah.
See, I will risk I'd rather have a runny white a little bit than a hard yolk. And that's where me and my sister differ. Because she's like, if it's runny white, she won't eat it. She gets grossed out.
Yeah, I'm with your sister on this one. Sorry.
But Rocky drinks eggs.
You're absolutely right.
I saw Gordon Ramsay make eggs, and they were like porridge.
Oh, really? Oh, like that's gross. Eggs.
So I was like, if he does that, I'm far from that. So I think I'm good.
Yeah.
So what I do, I get in my pan. I put butter in it. Well, I heat up the pan first, then put the butter in it. It's sizzling. Then I crack two eggs in there. I always just do two. Egg goes on. Lid goes on immediately.
Immediately?
Immediately. Now I'm bringing my seasonings, and I pepper it. Pepper. Always get pepper.
Yep.
Lid back on. Grab the salt. Salt. Lid back on. Chili flakes.
Just
a little bit.
Just a little bit? Okay.
Now these next two, like the pepper and the salt, they're there to really season it. The next couple of things I put on are just kind of to create this environment, this ambiance.
Oh, there's more.
Yes.
There's
more, right? So chili flakes give a little kick.
Right.
And I have yet to have one where I'm like, that's spicy. But I feel like it just gives a little more definition.
Zhuzh.
Yes, a little zhuzh.
Yeah, okay.
Then I do some onion. And I was going through our spice cabinet and I found like, I would call them onion flakes, but it's definitely not
onion powder?
It's not onion powder, because it's not powder form, but it's like chili flakes, if you could imagine red chili flakes, but onion.
So they are onion flakes?
Yeah, pretty much, actually. They're definitely not called that.
Minced
onion.
Oh, yeah, okay, I know what you're talking about, yeah.
So I do that,
right.
And that one I kind of go a little ham on. And then I take some dried basil.
Okay.
It's not like I'm crushing the basil.
Right.
I just put it on there. And this one, I got a lot of flack from my mom and my sister about this when I was describing this process. And I said, hold the phone. Nana has just rated this a 10 out of 10 egg, and you have yet to eat it, so don't give me this. So then I put the lid back on, and it's cooking.
It's cooking.
Then what I do, because there's a lot of butter in there, is I take a little water.
Yeah.
Pour it in there, lid back on.
Yeah.
The steam finishes it up. Pull it out. Because I don't like flipping the eggs anymore.
No. Flipping the eggs is a dangerous game.
It's a dangerous. And I used to do it, especially it got melted. So I was using like a cake slicer. I can't be bothered.
No.
I've lost too many good eggs.
Yeah.
So that's how this method came about in these past like week or two. And I think I found it for life.
I think you nailed it. I think that's the way that you make eggs. I'm going to have to try that.
What is your method?
Well, I cook. I used to cook a lot of eggs. I usually do 4 or 5 eggs.
Okay.
Big egg man. I drop them in. I usually do a little canola oil.
Not
butter, but a little canola oil. I drop the eggs in.
Mm-hmm.
I started just put them on low, wait for them to cook a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I just do salt and pepper. I'm just a salt and pepper guy.
Okay.
And then I take a little water, and I pour that in there, and I throw it on.
Well, I'm glad to see that happens too.
But I'll just cook them until they're hard, because I don't care.
Really?
Yeah. I just find that it's easier. I just wait until, and then I do other stuff, and then I come back to them. Okay. I should try this method, though. I have nothing opposed to runny eggs. It's just one of those things where I just don't have the patience or
stand over it,
really.
It's definitely a labor-intensive process.
It sounds like a very labor-intensive process.
And I'll tell you this, before this lid method,
mm-hmm.
I would put enough butter in, I would tilt the pan, and I would take a spoon, and I think the word is braise.
Wow!
With,
oh my goodness!
Like, I would go like this. Because I saw Gordon Ramsay do it, and I was like,
yeah,
if he does it,
yeah,
I need to elevate my eggs. And I did that, I thought it was great. But I will say this, I don't think it's worth the labor.
Mm.
I think the lid is just fine.
The lid works.
Now, I do like eggs that are cooked through all the way.
Yeah.
I don't mind that.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like a runny yolk.
Yeah.
I think
a runny yolk is good if you dip it
with
a little toast, yeah.
That's what I do.
I created the worst smell of my entire life with some runny eggs last week.
Oh. After you ate them?
No, before I ate them.
Okay.
No, I had the pan, I finished making the eggs. And where I live, I have an electric burner now.
Uh-huh.
I prefer the gas. I think the gas is easier to control than electric at the moment. So I slide the pan off because the electric burner doesn't cool down as fast.
It does not.
And then I'm scooping the eggs with the spatula and moving them over to the plate.
Mm.
And as I'm scooping it, the yolk breaks.
Oh.
And then the hot yolk breaks. It runs across the stove,
mm.
across the hot burner, which is already sitting there, burns
on the burner before reaching my plate.
Wow.
I've smelled some bad stuff in my life. A yolk on a hot electric burner is one of the worst that I've come across.
I would never have thought that, but
yeah,
the way you're describing it makes me feel like it was horrible.
It was really horrible. It was also, I find eggs are better on a cold day.
Hmm.
If it's like 90 degrees outside, I don't have AC. If it's like 90 degrees outside, it's like 85 inside. Eggs just, they don't sit right with me. And this was one of those days where it was creeping up there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a plate of eggs,
mm-hmm.
probably three or four of these things. Kitchen just smelled like that burnt yolk.
Mm.
And it was toasty. And I was on a hard time.
Yeah.
Hard time eating that plate of eggs. That was a rough morning, yeah.
Mm. That's tough. Now, I also do boiled eggs. I don't know if our listeners want to keep hearing me talk about eggs. So I'll keep it brief, but I boil eggs sometimes.
Yeah.
I did this more last summer. And I find that's good on a cold day because you let them chill.
Yeah. Boiled egg in the fridge is one of the best.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a little snack.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Eat that. I'll cut it in half.
Yeah.
That's where my fanciness comes in again. You know, salt and pepper.
Right.
Put a little powdered mustard. Mustard powder.
Mustard powder.
Wow. Yeah, I know. And that's how I eat it.
Wow. You really are fancy.
Say,
yeah.
I know. And here's the thing. I don't get any appreciation at home. So Mom, Grace, my sister, if you're listening to this, know that I do not get appreciation. I think I'm viewed. Now, this is changing. This is definitely changing. I was long viewed as incapable in the kitchen. As someone you're like, Luke, just don't help us.
Was there a good reason behind
that? No, there was no.
Okay.
It was just a bias they had.
Wow.
Because did I cook for people often? No. Did I cook for myself? Yes. Did I try new things? Yes. Were they always successful? No. But
as with all new things, they're not all going to be successful.
They're not all successful. But I will say this. This past year, my mom has gotten into HelloFresh. Maybe this could be our sponsor. Your sponsor. HelloFresh. It's easy. Or Blue Apron. We get a competitor on here. So I won't say the name, but we edit out the name of the brand. But it's this brand that sends you recipes and sends you ingredients. So my mom does that on and off this past year. So she might get like a box
that
has like three recipes. I would say like last summer we did it more and then the year we didn't. But we were tasked, me and my sister, with making it. And I definitely did it more than she did.
Oh, wow.
And I think I really impressed a lot of people with my skills. Because I will say this, if you do these recipes, read the whole recipe beforehand.
Okay.
Don't go step one, step two, step three, because they don't time it out very well. They'll start step one. I think if you had the recipe memorized, you could do it.
Yep.
But
right.
Check out, you know, because there's multiple elements to these recipes.
Mm-hmm.
Check out, listeners. When you're doing this, read it, see, okay, that's going to take 12 minutes, but that's going to take 5. So start the 12 minutes and then wait. So that way everything's hot. And I think that's where I succeeded, where, I don't want to say they failed, but where my mom and my sister fell short.
Mm-hmm.
Is sometimes parts of the recipe, part of the meal would be cold.
Oh, they didn't time up the Zenix right?
Mm-hmm.
That's always a tricky one.
And
yeah, you got to get everything ready, hot at the same time.
Mm-hmm. So I think this past year, I have started to build a reputation in the kitchen as capable.
Capable, wow.
Now, usually if I'm making something without a recipe, no one wants to eat it.
No.
Well, no one just says, Luke, what are you making? Well, to be fair, actually, I don't make a lot of stuff that's not basic without a recipe.
Okay.
If I'm making something without a recipe, it's going to be eggs. It's going to be a sandwich.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I can see why they want to ask for that. But I have built up quite a repertoire. And I will say this. I have a friend. He will remain nameless. But he's one of those folks that is very motivated to learn something new. And so he talks about it a lot.
Mm.
But does he learn something new?
Oh.
So he's been hyping himself up to get really good at cooking for a long time now.
Gotcha.
And I told him, friend, Spencer Newkirk, that's his name. I said, Spencer, man, it's not like something where you have to practice that much. You just read the recipe. Like, you can definitely, like, improve your skills.
Sure.
Like, cutting onions. Like,
right.
I'm not master level yet.
Yeah.
I do kind of slow. But I'm like, you just follow the recipe. And he's like, You know, so the other day I had to go, I don't know, a couple months ago, I went over there, I was like, hey, I'm going to come over, I'm going to teach you a recipe. And it's just like it's really easy. Listeners, I'm going to describe this to you, and you're going to be able to do it. So, you take carrots,
okay.
You chop them up pretty thickly, I would say half an inch thick, slightly slanted, so they're longer than, you know, just your basic cut in the middle.
Right.
Then you do the same thing with onions. So you're not dicing the onions, you're not mincing the onions, you're kind of getting them in little chunks, because obviously they're going to fall apart a little bit. So you get that, those two, you put it in a bowl, you toss it with a little olive oil, you salt it, pepper it, whatnot. You lay it in a pan, a bed.
Yeah.
And you take a whole chicken.
Whole chicken.
That's ideally been prepared where there's no head or innards. We don't want that. You take the chicken, you stuff some lemons or some orange inside of it.
Okay.
Slice that up. Some garlic.
Yeah.
Rub a little olive oil on it, just enough so it has a nice brown. And you season it salt and pepper.
Yeah.
Also, sometimes I mix it up, but just having salt and pepper. You plop it on the bed of vegetables. You put it in the oven, 450, I think. Maybe 425.
Okay.
For like an hour. 15 minutes, I put it on and I check. And then you bring it out and you really impress people. Mm. You're like, wow, you just cooked the whole chicken. Really, all you did was just put things inside
the chicken and then you put it in the oven.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So people are very impressed
with
that meal.
That sounds like that's a pretty impressive meal to just pull out.
I think so. So I went over to my friend's house, Spencer, and I hope he doesn't. I hope he listens to this, but he probably at this point has tuned out when I started talking about dance. Had he made it to the egg section, he would have listened.
Yeah.
I said, let's make this. And he's like, okay. So we had to go to the grocery store, which is a block from his house. But then we had to go to a secondary grocery store because they did not have chickens. At Kroger.
Whoa.
To be fair, it was like 7 o'clock at night. So maybe there was a chicken rush.
Sure. Often there's a chicken rush at around 6:25. So, yeah.
We had to go to the dependable Whole Foods.
Ah,
and
classic.
Whole Foods, although their prices are a little higher, you can get what you need.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say that. If Jeff Bezos was able to go to space, you're able to get a chicken. No. We get there. You get that. And I started doing it. I'm like, all right, man, let's do this. And he's like, do we really need two people in the kitchen? I'm like, are you kidding me, man? You hollered me over here to teach you how to make this recipe. And so I had to drag him throughout the whole process.
Wow.
And it's like a 3-step process.
Yeah, it's pretty simple.
But now he knows. Now he knows. And
wow.
So we mastered it.
Nice.
So, Spencer, I know you're going to bring that recipe out. I think he's made it a couple times now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. So you're not only cooking, but you're spreading the cooking influence
and
around.
Since we have such a large fan base on this podcast, what are your fans called for this podcast?
We don't have a name yet. I'm still sort of workshopping what we call fans of the podcast.
For listeners, Meshach's going to say the name of the podcast, and then I'm going to workshop some names real quick.
Okay. So the podcast is called The Dialectic.
Dialectic. Dial heads. Dial up. Dialers. Lectors. Lectins. Dialectins. Dialectics.
I like dialectins. Yeah.
Okay. Dialectins.
That's a good one.
So dialectins. You now know that recipe.
You know what's so funny is that you named my previous company.
I did, and I'm very proud of the name. It's definitely, I think of the name, and I'm like, that was definitely a name I would come up at that time.
Yeah, yeah, it was good. When I was really little, the company was called Cousin Crew. It was started with me and my cousin, and we were like making movies out of our garage. My cousin stopped after a couple of years, and I just kept doing it, kept the name for years and years and years. And then, like a decade, probably, I probably started when I was like 8, and like by the time I was like 17, 18, I was like, this name, I've outgrown this name. Cousin Crew doesn't quite work. And so I was like, what do I call it? And I was sitting down with you, and you gave me a brilliant name.
M to the fourth.
Because it was Meshach Mallon.
Listeners, this is Meshach Mallon, who you're listening to.
Marco Montoto.
A dear friend of Meshach and partner.
And there's four M's.
Four M's.
Yes.
And so I just said M to the fourth. Now, I will say for the M to the fourth, the only thing I've noticed is if I'm YouTubing you guys, I'm like, well, I can't. Do I do the M carrot four?
Yeah.
So I just type out N to the fourth.
That's how it's written out on YouTube at the moment.
And I think that's the best.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. That became the tricky thing. That's why we'll probably change it again,
yeah.
Is that you can't really spell it.
Yeah, it looks good, but you're like, how do I spell this out? It's not clear.
And like the logo looks good, because it's a little M with a four superscript, but it's not quite spellable.
Now, do you have ideas for the new name?
The new...
Are you prepared to say it now? I'm prepared to say it now. Okay.
The new name, and I'm not going to say why it's the new name on air.
Okay.
But it's a number that has a lot
of meaning.
Sex
ethics. We're not going to say why it is.
The number has a lot of meaning to me.
Okay.
And it's called 2931 Productions.
2931 Productions. I think that's a solid name.
Yeah.
I think that is. I think I could see that. MGM. 2931 Productions.
I think the thing about it is that it's versatile.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I like, and it's short. Because you could just say 2931. That could just be the name of it, right?
Oh, I was working with 2931, the folks at 2931.
Exactly.
Oh,
exactly.
Really? It's great.
And I could do whatever. I could print magazines with it. I could make films.
Mm-hmm.
I could do TV. Like, there's nothing in it that, like, restricts the domain that I can perform in.
Nothing says, this screams movies.
Right. Right.
You know, it could be anything. It could be merch.
Could be merch. Yeah. Who knows where I'm going to branch with it.
Are you prepared to get merch for this podcast? I feel like...
If there's a demand for merch, if people are requesting merch, I will make merch happen.
Boom. I think, first idea off the top of my head, I don't know if your other guests have proposed ideas.
They have not been nearly as you know, involved in the actual, the logistics of the podcast as you clearly are. Yeah.
Well, I'm a businessman.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have run zero businesses, but... I'm just the idea guy that I think listeners have picked up on. Something with eggs on it, because we've talked about it. Maybe an egg in a pan. I feel like it would be big in Japan. They love, like,
this podcast or
I think the merch.
Or the merch.
If we had, like, a cartoon egg, like cracked, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like I've seen that before. I think there's, like, a word for it in Japan where it's, like, cute. Like, they have, like, 5 different words for cute in Japanese. Fun fact, I think our Japanese listeners over across the pond, over across the Pacific, will be like, yeah, Luke is right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, an egg, a cracked egg.
So that's an idea.
Yeah.
I think you'd have to have like a little tagline,
mm-hmm.
like, I like it running. that needs workshop. Maybe when you're going back through this episode and you find those clips and you're like, that's the perfect... soundbite. And maybe actually what will probably happen is our cult following will just start picking up words that you've said and I've said now.
Right.
And they'll be like, ah. And it'll just become sort of this lingo. And it's so organic.
Right.
That they probably even start making the merch before you do.
Whoa. Whoa, it's like those Etsy stores where they
exactly.
like do like fan merch. Yeah.
Exactly. So the fan merch kind of inspires the legit.
Dude.
Mm-hmm. I just want to get on that.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
But yeah, so that's your merch idea.
I like the merch idea. I like the merch idea a lot. I had not considered any merch for the podcast so far.
I have, well, here's the thing. I've been listening to a lot of podcasts lately.
Yeah.
And we talked about this pre-recording.
Yeah, before the cameras turned on.
Absolutely, they say that a lot in these podcasts.
Oh yeah?
They reference what they said pre-recording. It makes you kind of feel like, oh, we're seeing behind the scenes, so that's why I said it. But I've listened to a couple, actually two, one, and they're just kind of talking podcasts like this.
Right.
But I listened from the start, from the beginning. And so I feel like I'm getting kind of into the evolution of a podcast. So first step, you start putting out podcasts, you start gaining a following, you start making references to your followers and they feel special and they feel like there's more.
Right.
Or you go the opposite way and say, oh, we only have one listener. And everyone was like, no, that's not true. And so there's two things for that.
Okay,
that
okay. Two options. I see.
So
I see.
Listeners out there, see, I'm already doing.
Yeah.
Especially our friends in Japan. How do you say hi in Japan? Japanese? Konnichiwa.
There you go.
Boom. Konnichiwa. And then you start merch.
Right.
Merch is the next step. And then it's a live tour.
The live tour. Oh.
And so that, to me, I always feel like they do it a little early, but I guess they don't. I don't have the data that they do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm like, I'm the only one listening to this.
Right.
So I think merch, definite. And I think for the merch, it has to look cool where someone would go up to the listener, to the dialectans, like, that's a great shirt. Where did you get it?
Right.
H&M, Gucci. Where? Those are very similar stores, similar brands.
Somebody would easily confuse the two. Right, yeah.
And they're like, no, actually, it's merch from this podcast I love. So I think the merch is going to be so great. It, like the name of your production company,
yeah.
It doesn't scream merch for a podcast. Mm,
the merch actually like supersedes the podcast. The merch is...
It stands on its own.
Yeah.
It becomes a clothing line.
I see. Okay, so this transforms from a podcast to a cult following,
mm-hmm.
to a clothing line.
I don't think it's just a clothing line. I think it's a lifestyle.
Whoa.
Similar to Goop.
Mm.
And, for instance, Gwyneth Paltrow was on a podcast I was listening to, so I'm all...
Wow.
I'm in the know about Goop.
You're really, really in the know on podcasts.
I am. And mostly celebrity podcasts. I don't mess around with no names.
Whoa. Wow.
I don't. I'm just going to say it out there right now. If I just feel like it's just some randos, and I don't have time for that. But the listeners here... do, and that's why I appreciate them.
Wow.
So, yeah, she's saying Goop. An interesting fact about this, the reason it's called Goop is because Gwyneth Paltrow, GP,
mm-hmm.
so she had a GP, and a buddy of hers said, all internet, because it started out as an internet website. As a website.
It's an internet website. I love the brick and mortar website. It's the best, yeah. Oh, have you ever been there?
So it started out, and they're like, well, all websites, all internet stores, have two O's in them. The best ones have two.
Oh, okay.
Google, Facebook, they said many others, but so that's why.
Amazon, yeah.
Yeah, Amazon. Amazon. So that's why it became Goop, and I think, while the dialectic doesn't have that, I think it's got some hard consonants that really catch the attention.
Really, really get
you. Yeah, because like you get dialectic.
Whoa.
You overpronounce that C.
Yeah.
Eck. And then it's kind of cool.
It is. It's very cool.
It's
yeah.
the opposite of Google. There's no horror. You're like, ooh. And I think Google...
You can lose all your teeth and say Google.
Yeah,
exactly the same, yeah.
So this, maybe you're an ableist.
Mm.
And you're not making an inclusive podcast for those without teeth, but I think it's a risk we're willing to, you're willing to take, obviously.
Yeah.
I'm not part of this, I'm just a guest. I said we a lot of times in this podcast, and I keep on looking at the mic, like I'm directing my attention towards the mic.
Well, that's good, at least they're going to pick up the sound pretty well.
I think so, I think they'll know I'm talking directly. I guess I can look at the camera.
Yeah.
But whenever I look at the camera, I look at the screen, so I look at myself.
That's the problem. Do you ever see... I have this problem because I shoot the vlogs for the
mm-hmm.
Sam and Mishak show. And I always, like, I'll catch myself looking at myself in the screen. And
mm-hmm.
so in the edit, it just looks like I'm looking just, like, slightly off.
Mm-hmm.
Slightly off center. It's, yeah. That's, I you know why? That's why Casey Neistat wears sunglasses.
Oh.
So that he can look at himself in the screen.
That
and
makes
nobody,
sense.
Nobody can tell.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Great conversation switch. Your vlog, I think, has done successfully well.
Oh, thank you.
I think it's... When you first started, I was like, I remember when he started to vlog, and he said he was going to do it every day.
Yeah.
And he didn't.
I didn't do it every day.
And I was in, like, the first episode
you
of
were.
The vlog,
yeah.
and I was so excited. I've shown multiple people that clip. Just me. Like, I'm in it! But I think you guys did great so far.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, it's already July. You're already more than halfway
through. Already more than halfway through, yeah.
And I would say, I've noticed, one, I can notice a different style between you and Sam.
Yeah.
Who is, listeners, in case you don't follow all of Mishak's countless things, Sam and Mishak. Sam is Mishak's friend, Mishak is Sam's friend, and they have a vlog similar to Vlogbrothers. Which came first, it's hard to say.
It's tough to say, yeah.
But they have different... Each vlog has a different personality. Well, one, between vlogs. But no two vlogs are too similar, I would
mm-hmm.
say.
Okay.
But I can tell, like, if you weren't in it, and Sam wasn't in it, and it was about different people, and I didn't know whose friends were whose, you know, I'd be like, I think I could say Mishak made that one, or Sam made that one. And I don't think one is better than the other.
Yeah.
I think they're just unique, and I think it's interesting because a lot of people's channels, there's not two personalities on there.
Right, right. I think that is one of the cool things, is that Sam and I are really good friends, but at the same time, we're very different, and especially in terms of the way that we talk about things, we think about ideas, and the way that we actualize, like, a concept that I might be a little bit, I'm going to think about it way more from, I think, the film side of things, and he's going to think it more from the, kind of the idea side of things, like the concept of it, and so it's been a wild ride, because I get to watch half of the show, like, I have to make half of it, but I get to watch the other half, and it's really cool to see the stuff that he's churning out.
I will say this, no disrespect, I think Sam, some of his vlogs, there's more stuff happening.
There are more stuff happening.
Although, I think one of my favorite was your song you wrote.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Did you watch that one?
I did, multiple times. Oh. I thought it was great.
Oh, thank you.
I was very impressed.
I don't know how to sing or play the guitar.
I would go as far to say that your song was better than Sam's song.
Wow.
Sam, I'm sorry, I know you're going to listen to this and you're going to start swinging. Swinging fists, but it's true. Meshach's song was better. And I felt more because I saw, I think it's just because I saw you perform it. And Sam's was the music video, which was interesting.
Yeah.
Shout out to Sam's dad, who I assume that was.
No, it was Sam's dad, yeah.
Sam's dad, you were great in there. I think you have a future in cinema, namely music videos. But I was like, Meshach's guitar is really great. Now, I did not listen, I did not watch, and it keeps on popping up in my feed. I feel like YouTube's trying to make me do it. So sometimes when YouTube keeps on putting videos for me to watch, I don't watch it. Just despite it. I have not watched the one where you're like the difference between acoustic and electric.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like it'd be good.
It's
impressive.
I thought it was a good video. I made it.
I'm like, oh, it's not Meshach playing, right?
Yeah.
Based off the thumbnail.
Right.
Because I didn't see it. So I was like, this is probably pretty good. But I have not watched it.
Yeah, that would be Marco Play, who has 10, 11 years of guitar experience under his belt, so.
Sorry, Marco, it's nothing personal, it's because YouTube oversold it.
Yeah, you can't watch it. Now it's a principal thing, really.
Yeah, it really is, it is.
No, that makes a lot of sense.
I might watch it on someone else's account.
Ah, you go incognito and watch it. Exactly. Yeah.
Now, I did like, Sam, I like your video where you went sailing.
That was a good video.
I thought it was good. I liked the one actually more when he's on the speedboat with his dad.
Yeah.
I thought that was better than the one where he's more recently, I think he's in Connecticut now, right?
Yeah.
Because I thought I got more boat action.
You definitely did get more boat action, yeah.
And that 360 camera.
That's pretty cool.
It's pretty cool.
Pretty cool. I wish I had a 360 camera. Yeah.
I think he uses it well.
He does use it well, yeah. Mm. Sparsely enough, but yeah.
He doesn't overuse it. It doesn't feel gimmicky, it feels interesting.
Yeah.
So, Sam, congrats. Sorry for saying Meshach's song is better, but your boat video is better than Meshach's boat video, which has yet to come out.
Which has yet to come out, yes. Mm-hmm. I was going to get a raft to just like float out in the middle of the Atlantic.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
I actually went sailing soon, recently.
Really?
Yes, I've never sailed before.
How was that?
It was cool.
Yeah.
I would say, I say sailing, and people have these, and our listeners probably have images of me in the ocean. But once again, listeners, I do not have much experience in the ocean. I was on a river, the Olentangy. My friend, Preston Newkirk, who if you remember earlier I mentioned Spencer Newkirk, Preston is Spencer's brother. I visited him at his work, and he's a lifeguard for the Columbus, I guess Parks and Rec, but there's a sailing camp they do.
Nice.
And so kids come for a week or two, and they learn to sail, but he's there every day, and they churn out. So he's like, oh, come by. So I sailed with him. It's just on a little dinghy. Very cool.
Yeah?
Very cool. I'm very impressed. I feel like I now have the goal of sailing around the world on a sailboat.
You know what's wild? Marco and I almost bought a boat, like last week.
They're not as expensive as you said. What did he say? Like, oh, a couple years ago.
Last week, we found a guy in Cleveland
that
was giving away a boat.
Really?
Or maybe it was $1,000. It was unclear.
Yeah.
But I needed a 20-foot trailer and a truck to get to Cleveland to get the boat and bring it back. And then I would need a place to put the boat.
Yeah.
That's tricky. It was beautiful. It was beautiful. There are other boats for like $5,000. Yeah. $5,000 or $10,000. Like, not, I thought they were going to be way more expensive. I think you should totally do it. You should sail around the world.
It's a goal of mine.
Yeah.
It's a goal.
Become an expert at sailing.
Yeah.
Expert at dancing, expert at sailing, expert at cooking.
Expert at cooking. Well, I'm basically already there for cooking.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think for sailing, that's the thing. That's the only thing that I'm hesitating on is I'm like, I feel like I'd have to be really good to sail if I were going to sail around the world.
I would say so.
And I don't know if I have... Right now, mm-hmm. I do not have the motivation to learn to sail that well.
Right.
But I also am based in Ohio, in Columbus, Ohio.
Again, landlocked.
Landlocked. Yeah. So, where did I learn? There was a guy in my high school, Hal, I know you're listening. I have not seen him since we graduated, but he was really into sailing. So maybe I hit him up.
Yeah.
He either teaches me or we go together.
Mm.
And
like a rekindling.
Yeah, well, we were... Hal, I'm sorry to say this, we were never friends.
Oh. Oh, okay.
And I think Hal would agree.
Okay.
We knew each other in classes.
Sure.
I chatted him up. Have you ever noticed this? This is where I found myself. Tangent. So you say chit-chat, and you can also say chat.
Right.
But you can't say chit.
You can't say chit.
And I think we should change that right now.
So you were chitting him up.
I was chitting him up, and that's going to be on merch.
So what's the mix?
I would chit him up, and I think a chit is different than a chat. Chit is just like a two-sentence combo. Another great. Instead of combo, versation. We just say versation. A chit is just a two-sentence versation. So I would chit him up in school and whatnot. But I have not seen him since, and we're not great buddies. So I think we go on a sailboat
right.
around the world.
Yeah.
I imagine this takes more than 2 weeks.
I would say so, probably.
I don't know how many knots we would typically get on the ocean.
Right.
And I don't know the MPH. I would have to go knots to kilometers per hour to miles per hour.
Yeah.
I do not know the typical. So I think after anything past 2 weeks in a boat with someone, you just become great friends.
You have to. Or great enemies.
Oh, great enemies.
Yeah.
And how I might be able to take you out.
Whoa.
If it comes to it. The only thing is I think he has more survival skills. So I
that would
think,
be rough. Yeah.
I think he would know I couldn't take him out.
Yeah.
Because I won't survive without him. And so that'd be an interesting dynamic.
I think that's a good premise for a film right there.
I was just about to say
oh,
this.
Oh wow.
I was just about to say this, and I will gladly
well
let your production company take the reins on that one.
Wow. Okay.
I don't need any royalty fees or anything.
Yeah. You want I imagine you want a big, like full top to bottom text at the beginning.
Yes.
This is story.
Yes.
Luke, something else that I want to say.
The story of the almost story.
The almost story.
Perhaps
ooh,
this doesn't
ooh, this
happen.
Is right.
You know, if we never do this, but and what would have happened had Luke.
Almost based on a true story.
Almost based on a true story. I think this would be very interesting. Now, filming might be hard, unless you were willing to go film in the ocean.
Yeah.
I think logistics, it might be hard.
Might be a little expensive, yeah.
This might be a little movie 3. For you, movie
yeah,
4,
right.
post-graduation,
yeah.
depending on success
yeah.
of you in the production company. But I think all I ask
okay.
is, one, the beginning, the story that almost happened to Luke and Imelda Amati, the movie starts rolling, and I want a scene to happen before that.
Okay.
So people are locked in.
Right.
And I think for this, obviously, the first scene has to be like, further along in the story, looks people. It's the disaster
right.
scene. This storm's a brewing. Hal's trying to kill me.
Oh, wow.
And then we, the story that almost happened to Luke, and Imelda Amati. Then we cut to day one.
Yeah.
Or you cut to day one. Once again, I throw myself in. And so I think this would be a very interesting movie.
Yeah.
I think some might compare it to Life of Pi. I have not seen that movie, but I know a tiger and a guy are on a boat together.
That's true. I've read the book.
I started the book.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm going to finish the book. I never did.
You didn't finish it. Well, there's still time.
And yeah.
You're not dead yet.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Nothing against the book. I thought it was an interesting part. I read.
Mm-hmm.
Just life got in the way.
Yeah, life sometimes does that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the way. You know some books I have read multiple
times?
What
are some books you have read multiple times?
Crazy Rich Asians.
I didn't know that was a book.
Yes. Great book, I would say.
Yeah.
And I get some flack from my family. I don't get some flack. But for the longest time, as a young reader, I would tell my mom, like, I cannot stand romance in books.
Mm.
But I have happened to read several romantic books.
Yeah.
pretty intensely, and I think...
You read them intensely?
Yes.
Yeah.
And thoroughly. And I think everyone knows that Luke secretly likes romance books.
Sounds like you're admitting it right now.
I'm not admitting it. I don't particularly like them. However, when I find myself reading it, I cannot put it down.
Mm.
That's why I haven't read Twilight, because I just know...
Oh, you know that it would become your favorite book.
It would be.
Yeah.
But Crazy Rich Asians, I'm not going to lie, this book has inspired me to move to Singapore.
Really?
Yes. And ideally, I would meet one of these Crazy Rich Asians.
Yeah.
And it would be in the rebellious streak, so they marry me.
Right.
Just some commoner from Ohio.
Oh.
With limited seafaring experience.
Yeah.
Tangent to the movie. Me and Hal, we're on our way to around the world. We get in such a big fight, he drops me off at Singapore.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And he finishes the journey.
Yes.
Maybe this is movie two.
Oh, this is a sequel. Okay. I know
the movie ends not with us arriving, but with us, you know, surviving.
Yes.
And so it's a standalone movie, it can.
Yeah.
But beginning of movie two.
Okay.
Totally different. Genre, totally different vibe, but it's me in Singapore.
On the waves, surfing.
Surfing,
right.
Yes. And meeting some lovely ladies who are very wealthy and being their object of rebellion that their parents do not like. Now, I think I don't want my Singaporean wife's parents not to like me. I want them to like me, but I just don't think it will happen.
What if they didn't like you at the beginning? Where they didn't like the idea of you,
they don't like
but
that.
Then they meet you,
yes,
and they go, wow.
Realistically, I think that would happen.
Yeah.
I think in the movie, people would be like, this character, whoever wrote it, is so vain that everything's working out for the character. In real life, this would work out for them. But in a movie, it just wouldn't seem realistic, you know? We need that point of conflict that continues. Otherwise, it just turns a rom-com.
Right, right.
And you're a serious filmmaker.
I am. I'm a very serious filmmaker, yeah.
A little bit more than I would say Judd Apatow, you know?
Sure,
no
sure.
Shots fired towards Judd. Me and Judd go way back. But I think you have a little more grit to your movies. I can
yeah.
just tell.
Well, why, thank you.
And I think they're significantly shorter. And folks, that's a deep cut reference because Judd Apatow makes movies that are just too long. They're great. All the reviews are always like, it was a great movie, I just thought it was 30 minutes too long.
Yeah, sure.
But you're like, well, each 30-minute part was great.
Four-year
version. It
yeah.
felt like two different movies.
It truly did. That's a long movie.
Yeah.
That movie really could be shorter.
But I think it's actually a meta level. He said, I'm going to make this movie so long, they understand what it's like to be a four-year virgin. They're like, wow. And I think that's what he did.
I think you're right.
It's similar to Wolf of Wall Street with the two montages.
Just so long, yeah.
Yeah, it wears you out.
Right.
And it's reflecting the lifestyle that has worn
exactly.
out.
Exactly.
Leonardo DiCaprio's character.
Yes.
No, I have not seen this movie.
No, you haven't seen Wolf of Wall Street?
I have not seen
it. Really?
The other day I looked it up and I
yeah.
said I want to watch this. Unfortunately, it was not on Netflix.
It is one of my favorite movies. I think you should see it. It is like, it's so dark. And at the same time, you look at him and his crazy lifestyle, and there's a little bit of envy. You're like,
yeah.
Ooh, what if I? Ooh, that's kind of maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
If I just use the principles of peak.
There you go.
But I've been on a little bit of a movie. I wouldn't say binge, but I enjoy watching movies.
Sure.
Because I feel like afterwards, I feel like I've accomplished something.
Mm.
And so sometimes I like to watch older movies. Whether or not, I like to watch kind of slow burner movies.
Yeah.
I find it makes me feel more intellectual.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, you know, the mass public probably didn't like this movie.
Right.
But Luke does. But I just watched Point Break, which is not that type of movie.
No.
Because to prepare for my surfing.
Right, right.
I don't know why I didn't watch it before, but I was like, this was a cool movie. Was it very of its time? Yes.
Yeah.
Could they remake it? No.
Sure.
They did remake it. I don't think it went well. But I was like, this is a great movie. Shout out to Patrick. Patrick Swayze. You're great in that movie. Although, R.I.P. But I have been getting into movies, and I would love to hear some of your recommendations. Obviously, Wolf of Wall Street.
Wolf of Wall Street is a great one. You're looking for slow burns?
Slow burns, fast burns, anything that makes, like, I'm like, that's... I started, for instance, yeah. I started, Fight Club.
Ooh, it's a good movie.
I got interrupted.
Oh, darn.
And my... It was like 5 minutes in.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I'm not, it's not disrupted.
Yeah.
It's interrupted. My mom's like, we're not watching that tonight. That'll just get me down.
Yeah.
I'm like, what are you talking about, Mom? It's about fighting.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a little bit more than that.
It is. It's just a touch more. Fight Club's a good one.
So, Fight Club, that's on my next list.
Old movies? Old movies that are really good?
Old movies.
Have you seen Bonnie and Clyde?
I have not.
Bonnie and Clyde is a stellar piece of work.
Okay.
Yeah.
I
have a great movie.
Okay.
Do you like Westerns? You're a Western guy?
I liked Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Okay.
And that's kind of Western.
Kind of Western-ish. This is a little darker.
Okay.
It's a movie called Unforgiven.
Okay.
Clint Eastwood.
Okay.
1992 it comes out, and it's a really gritty, realistic Western. It is so good. I heard that it was like his greatest piece beforehand. Mm. I was like, no way. I've seen The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen Clint Eastwood at his best. Mm. I had not seen Clint Eastwood at his best. This is a monument of cinema. Okay. It is great.
You know what's crazy, listeners?
What?
Clint Eastwood is so old.
He's still alive.
He's still alive. Like, he was making movies in the 60s.
Right.
And he was grown. Like, he wasn't like 20-year-old.
No.
He, in those movies, he looks like an adult, like
yeah.
40-year-old.
Because he is, like, he's like 30, he's in his 30s.
Yeah. And he never stopped.
Yeah.
And
he also never stopped having kids.
Yeah, well.
He has kids that
are like Clint.
Our age.
Yeah.
Isn't that wild?
That is wild.
You'd be our age and you could, your dad could be Clint Eastwood.
I think, this is a realistic
yeah.
Assumption of myself. I think I will age like Robert Redford and Clint.
Yeah.
You know, just well.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah.
And do I live the lifestyle of Mick Jagger? No.
No.
That's not what I want. He's an old dude who just had a baby. More Clint. But Clint is also pretty tall.
Clint is pretty tall.
And listeners, you can't hear it from my voice, but I've already alluded to it. I'm a generous 5'9".
Mm-hmm.
But short people live longer. It's a fact.
Yeah, less gravity pulling them down.
Yes,
yeah.
Less strain on their organs.
Mm.
It's real.
Wow.
Yeah, I swear
okay.
to God.
Okay.
That's the only reason. When I'm sad about how short I am,
I'm sorry.
I tell myself, Luke, at least you'll see the tall people die.
Luke Simonello Delamonte, thank you so much for being
thank
on the
you.
Podcast.
Glad to be here.
This was awesome.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Great to chat with you, man.
Yeah.
All right, take care.
All right.